Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 55 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, a.k.a. All Day Ray, a.k.a. Chief Ray Strongbow. And I'm joined here by my affluent co-host, former market maker of 20 years and current day retail trader, a man known for furnishing only in rich white leather upholstery and rugs made of exotic mammals, a man who, if he was involved in the types of manipulations nowadays that he was in the 90s and 2000s, he'd have all the social activists and moon boys on his ass. I'm talking about the infamous gorilla of House Street, JJ.
Hey, what's going on? Good. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. A lot of exuberance in the air.
And happy month end.
Yeah. Our guest today, he founded Wall Street Bets in 2012, which is a large online community which yields a commanding presence in the world of finance. It's been featured in Wall Street Journal's Market Watch, as well as Bloomberg, CNBC, Money Magazine, Forbes, Vice, Business Insider, and Fortune. A firm who has been credited with taking out hedge fund Melvin Capital, making global headlines. Author of the book Wall Street Bets, I'm talking about Jamie Rogozinski. Jamie, how's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Jamie, really pumped that you're doing this with us, especially at this timing, with everything going on. Having you on, you know, with my co-host, being a former manipulator, this is who Wall Street Bets is coming for nowadays. So just to get his perspective from this too, it should be great. As a guy who started all this, Jamie, seeing this grow into hedge funds getting taken down, I mean, how does this feel? What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm watching this on the sidelines like a fascinated spectator, to be honest with you. It's extremely interesting. What you're seeing right now is this organization of this massive crowd taking advantage of this asymmetry in money by, number one, getting huge numbers of people together and leveraging their money using stock options, forcing the big people to make the big trades and essentially being able to very successfully affect the prices of what appears to be now several different stocks. So it's, you know, it's really interesting to watch. It's interesting for a million different reasons. In addition to the one I just mentioned, the fact that historically Wall Street's kind of been this elite club. If you want to participate in it, it's an invite only big boys poker table, if you want to put it that way, where you have these big funds that you're familiar with, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, or even different private funds. They now have a new player on the table, and this player is comprised of just millions of people, and they are working as one to be able to compete. So it's just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm even seeing Portnoy's been getting back active, supporting the movement. I know that's someone you spoke with previously. You know, this whole movement, Jamie, it sort of reminds me a little bit of online poker in like the early like 2000s to mid 2000s. There was a poker forum called 2+2. Shout out to them. Which you saw a lot of young onshot, like hotshot online players coming on who didn't really have too much respect for the old guard and vice versa. And I've just seen a lot of similarities to what's going on now. And a lot of these guys went on to be the best players eventually in the world. And still some of them still are. Do you think we're going to see some traders, you know, some star traders born from this era that will be long-term successful?
I mean, absolutely, right? Because there's now new rules to the game. Mm-hmm. I guess unlike poker, where the rules of the game have always been established. Now this new demographic of people are allowing for a different way to look at the market, right? So what I mean is, previously you have traditional investors, if we want to call them that, that look at specific trades by saying, well, this is going to be a value investor, this is going to be a growth investment, and this is why, and you can go at it as to who's got the better strategy. But nowadays you can lump those on one side, I guess, put them in together as to the academic strategy, and then you have what is now the meme strategy, right? These stocks that people invest in because of funny pictures or videos or tweets or just because it's fun to talk about. You know, it's funny until you realize that it's actually making a huge effect on things. And we're talking about, sure, what's happening now with GameStop or whatnot. We also saw it last year with stocks like, for example, Hertz, that have gone bankrupt, and the stock more than doubled because of people flocked to it. Talking about investors that went to the wrong Zoom, you know, when the pandemic started, everyone was starting to get locked in. They typed in ZOOM, didn't realize they're buying the wrong Zoom. Traditional guys are sitting there going, ha ha ha, you new kids, you don't know what you're doing. Well, those new kids that don't know what they're doing made more money than the ones that got the current Zoom, right? So what's the name of the game? It's about making money. You know, I'd hesitate to call this group of people traders, because, you know, it's far from what you or I may consider to be trading. You know, even if you get away from the investing standpoint and you look at actual trading, that, you know, they had also different schools of thought. You have the technical analysis, or you have the news guys, or you have the quant guys that go through statistics, and you have all sorts of different approaches to it and methodologies that also have their own discipline revolving around it. These guys don't even care about that. They don't even use bar charts. They, you know, they literally just want to know what stock to buy next and whether it's going to go up or whether it's going to go down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's funny. The memes are obviously great, but it's like, it's like you were saying, like the meme stocks. It's like, I got my own like watch list now, right? It's like you pay attention to the meme stocks. It's like its own like little sector. It's just fascinating times. And just a reminder to the listeners, if you'd like to trade alongside JJ, myself, and a supportive community of traders, we trade futures, equities, and options. Join us at microefutures.com. Jamie, for those not familiar with yourself or Wall Street Bets, can you just give us your background in finance and trading?
I started completely, very much like everybody else, or a lot of other people that I know of. I graduated school in 2005 on university. I started a tech business. I did really well with that. I sold that off after a couple of years. You know, and during that acquisition process, there were fancy words that had been used that I didn't really know about. These are finance terms, like, you know, stock warrants and this, that, the other. So I decided to get a little bit more involved. I also started studying finance. On my master's, I ended up going into my bank to buy some stocks and get my idea. But back then, you know, you had to pay $30 each way to buy stocks. And it was through like the Wells Fargo now website. Like, it was nothing what it is today. And as years progress, probably around 2010, 2011, I really start taking an interest in it. You know, I'm single at the time and I have a disposable income, and you have these discount options brokers that are coming out. So, you know, I was looking for a way to risk some more of my money, of course, with the hopes of making some of that money back. And yeah, that's where I started learning. I learned a ton of things about the stock market, a lot about stock options, a lot about different approaches. These would be methods that you and I probably consider traditional traders. That's kind of what I learned. And that's pretty much where my knowledge base is today. It's been fine tuned along the way. Of course, Wall Street Bets took that and then just completely went running with that idea. And they've developed their entire new demographic of participants in the stock market that have nothing to do with the other participants.
Yeah, but now, Jamie, you started Wall Street Bets because you wanted a community that was more like a high variance style, a high risk, high reward style. Were these traditional trading methods just that weren't really appealing to you?
No, I mean, I had my 401k, my Roth, you know, I had exposure to the stock market,
yeah,
through my employers and things like that at the time. But yeah, I had no interest in buying index funds and just watching it go up, you know, 0.3% one day and go down 2.2%. You know, it was much more exciting. It felt like I had a lot more control over what's going on. And yeah, it was definitely more fun to delve into this high risk, high return. I wouldn't do this with my kids' college fund. You know, I was doing this with money that I pretty much expected to lose, and did on several occasions, as probably many other people did too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, through this whole time period and what we were talking about, these funds are getting shut down. You know, I think it's pretty obvious now, like these people need to be paid attention to. Like, people are seeing like, okay, what's Wall Street Bets looking at right now? In your mind, what type of adjustments do you think the hedge funds are going to be making to these events?
I'm going to start by saying, I don't know what the hedge funds are doing now, right? Yeah. It's easy to say the hedge funds are short GameStop and they're losing their shirt. We know that Melvin's in trouble, so that one's pretty much a done deal. But that's all we know, right? These guys have been at this game much longer than we have.
So
what adjustments are they making? I'm guessing Melvin didn't make whatever adjustments are necessary. And that's where they are today. But they're going to have to consider these, 25 standard deviation moves as a regular occurrence induced by social media.
Yeah. It's just so, keep using the word fascinating, but that this is not of enough combined volume from like everybody, Wall Street bets, retail money that can affect it. I mean, we're talking about funds. There's funds who are managing trillions of dollars nowadays. It's incredible. I mean, JJ, being somebody who worked on the other side of the desk, try and put us in some of these guys' heads if you can. Like, what do you think's going on?
I know exactly what's going on under the side of the street. First thing, any fund manager that has any kind of good sense would take 20 seconds and find out that GameStop had a short position that was bigger than the float. Now, I've taken 200 companies public, and my job was engineering short squeezes for people who want to get out of their stock in a business that's not doing well. Does that sound familiar? So what I would do is I would engineer a short squeeze, and GameStop has had a beautiful reaction where they engineered the short squeeze. They got a fund very, very short because the fund manager, I don't know, either has a huge ego and thought he could short something where there's no supply. And then now we have this retail community that comes in. And in the old days, what we'd call that is the street would take it. And what happened in GameStop is a very modern, beautiful way of the street taking the stock. And what happens is it happens exactly at the end of the month when market makers don't want to short too much. So that's why stocks gap, because they don't want to take risk at the end of the month. So retail comes in and drives this thing up. And the poor fools who are short this thing with size, like some of these funds, that's natural selection. Some of these funds don't deserve to be in business if they can't figure out not to short a stock that doesn't have supply. Even if it's in bankruptcy, I took a company to $300 a share that made glue out of sea coral for human bones, right? And all of the stock was, segregated. So I could move that company $20 or $30 a share with $2,000 worth of buying. So now just think about it. If you had, what did GameStop trade? $8 billion worth of dollar volume, right? If you have that kind of dollar volume coming in to a stock that has a purposely built short position in it, basically those hedge funds that are short are kind of like a kid sitting on a keg of dynamite picking their teeth with a kitchen match, right? So I think I think this is really cool, and I didn't even know anything because I'm 52 years old. I didn't know anything about Reddit, but I thought, my God, what a great thing. Now, the one thing I'm curious about, Jamie, is what kind of disclosure is going on there when these people are buying? Do they disclose? Or because in the old days, what we'd do is we'd have something called the Silicon Investor and the Raging Bull, which were websites. And I would pay guys to go in and get people all hyped up and say, oh, the shorts are covering, are cornered and this, and they're beating this company up. And then people would come in, to rescue, and they'd buy, and you'd sell hundreds of millions of shares into them. So do they have, I'm just curious, how does that work? Do you guys follow 17B? What goes on? How does that work?
What kind of disclosure? What is 17B? What is 13B? What is any of these things? They have an app on their cell phone, right? Okay. And they want to buy calls because everyone else is saying it's funny.
And that's it.
Oh, okay. And they turn around and they scroll down. They say calls because that's what they said. And they don't understand what any of these strikes and expirations. They go down to the part where they can afford it. They're like, $200, I can buy that. And then the application says, wait, you're about to put in a purchase for a call. Do you think the stock is going to go up or down, just to be sure? And they have to answer with a picture of a green arrow up
Really?
That's what these kids are doing. They're not filling out disclosure forms. Like they're not.
Okay, no. I'm talking when they post, like when you have a public message board where you influence people to buy. Sometimes people who own a position in the company can come in there and get people all hyped up and sell their stock into retail.
No. This is 2.0. So these guys, these guys go into the stock and they literally said they'll take a picture of you know, GameStop in the mall and they'll you know, line up a bunch of people standing at the front door, or they'll take a selfie in front of it with a thumbs up and they'll say,
okay,
this is why you should buy GameStop, because there's the only logo sign that's still on in this mall, whatever, it doesn't matter, or GameStop rhymes with something else, and they'll make the most absurd observation ever and they'll say that's why you should buy it. It's an individual. It's, you know, it goes viral.
I'm just trying to understand.
Institutional players don't, you know, they could be playing. We don't know who's behind these usernames, these anonymous username accounts.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Possible.
It's a beautiful way to bring buying into a deal, right? My job was to, like, you know, you take a company public and we'd have like 200-300 million shares. You have to make a market to dispose of that into, right? So you have to bring buying. And this would be a wonderful way to create that buying.
Yeah, I mean, it most certainly is a wonderful way to do it, but they'll, you know, this community will have none of it, because unless you put in a funny picture or use obscene, very offensive language and, you know, really get into this banter, you can do whatever you want. These companies are going to have to hire some really smart social media, you know, viral video makers, you know, and it's still hit or miss. How do things become viral? So it's,
I'm just curious.
It's possible. It's just,
right? Because when you've got $10 billion in dollar volume on the table, things don't just happen by accident. But I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And there is somebody who owns a convertible on this thing, and they're probably just easing paper off into this flow, which is a beautiful thing. I have nothing against this. I'm just trying to understand the mechanism of how it works, because I'm not familiar with it. That's all.
Now let me ask you guys something, because I you know, JJ, I was talking with a few people in the room, and shout out to Jerry, because he was the one that kind of brought this to my attention. Mm-hmm. And it helped, you know, help me navigate today successfully. Had a good day trading. That he was speculating that with all this going on with, you know, Melvick Capital getting shut down, a lot of these funds were going to want to ease up on their short positions just from a risk standpoint, right? Like, let's not even risk this. And so, like, our strategy going into today was, all right, we're going to target the high short interest stocks, high short float stocks, and take them long. And now, little did you know, all these things were fucking running today. Like, this seems like a plausible thing. Yeah.
Definitely, because it's month end.
What about just non-month end being a thing?
Well, then you wouldn't have as many, right? It's just because it's month end and people have to cover their short positions. They got to pay the bar tab at the end of the month. So you're going to have much more. So it's even better for us as retail traders, right? Because the business conditions exist that give that short position a much better chance of, you know, running, right? Of that stock running. Like, you guys had a great day in the room today, and I think that's wonderful, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Jamie, what do you think about, you know, people saying like this is a sign, amongst many others, that we're at a quote unquote top, if this is a bubble? I got a shit ton of people messaging me out of the blue, as I'm sure you are, JJ is, et cetera, asking about the markets that don't have any clue about the markets. what would you say? What do you think about that?
You know, I have two things to say about that. Number one, people have been screaming bubbles since 2010. You know, they had a little short, tiny bit of success last year that lasted like a month, where the stocks went down and then we're right back up, right? So, you know, 10 years of bragging bubbles, they got their day in the limelight to finally say that they were right. So for whatever that's worth, it's much more profitable to ride the bubble up. It doesn't matter. So that's the first thing. The second thing, like, bubble is a boomer word now. What does a bubble mean? Like, what is this thing going to burst? Remember, when these kids open up their cell phone account, and they buy an option, you know, they have a choice between guessing whether the thing is going to go up or down, right? They could buy a put, and then they could select the big red arrow to confirm their decision. They don't care. They're agnostic as to what the market's doing. What's the bubble mean? It just means you got to push the other button on the left side of the screen.
Right.
You know, when the stocks did go down last year with the pandemic, they switched to puts, and they bought puts, and they made money faster because you know that falls are faster. And they made a lot of it. You know, sure, people might have gotten burned during the transition, and then again when the market turned right back up. But they were making so much money, they felt guilty for cheering on the, you know, economy going down, the unemployment numbers going up, whatever. They started donating some of their profits away. You know, it was just fascinating. And once that direction changed, it's like, all right, cool, now we're going to go up again. All right, so we're all bullish now? Cool. All right, so now we're going with the calls, the ones on the right side of the screen. Yeah, cool. All right, so now I'm going to push that button from now on to make money. They don't care. They never own the stock. They're not going to wait for dividends on these stocks. You know, people saying, oh, the Hertz is a terrible investment. They'll hold Hertz for for a day. You know, I found Dave Portnoy, apparently, you know, we know whatever he was doing last year. At one point, he bought some huge amount of stock in some smallish company. And the CEO found out about this to the point where, you know, he had a sizable percentage of the company. So the CEO was trying to get a hold of Dave to say thank you and to present themselves, saying, well, let me tell you about this wonderful company, this product line and what we're doing. And it's just, you know, I just wanted to, this personal kind of touch to this. And it took him a couple of days to get a hold of Dave. By the time he got a hold of Dave, he said, So he's the CEO of whatever company it was. Oh, nice to meet you. Hey, listen, thank you for buying the company. Here's what I have to say. And Dave stopped and said, Oh, I dumped that stock like 4 hours later. I made a ton of money. Thank you, Mr. CEO, right? Like, that was it. He just had it for a little bit, and he liked it, you know, most likely because they delivered his dog food. I have no idea. That's what these people are doing at this point. What's a bubble mean? A bubble means we're going down now. All right, cool. And if you want to say, well, sometimes the market goes sideways, well, there's a button for that too, you know?
Yeah.
They just need to know what mode we're in, and the actual value of these stocks is meaningless to them because they're holding them overnight. The expiration dates on these options are a week at most. They don't care.
Yeah.
You know, they're indifferent.
Right. For sure. No, I love it as me and JJ are as well. Like in our trading, it's like, you know, it's like, we're not marrying these things. I think, you know, what would you say, you know, I think this has obviously drawn a lot of attention to like the newer traders. And I know not everyone on Wall Street Bets is like this, right? Because I know there's a lot of good information that I like, you know, I go on there, I monitor it, and actually I pick up a lot of good things on there. But, you know, you get people on there who are very like high risk, YOLO trades, et cetera, et cetera. Well, maybe just speak to risk management for maybe some of the newer people who are, you know, maybe don't have the money to just gamble it up or trying to take this like serious.
I mean, risk management, that's a word that I learned back when I was learning to trade. All right, that's an important one for anybody in this industry, but it's certainly not a word in these people's vocabulary.
Yeah.
Because they're just looking at this as an expense. Is how much is this ticket costing me for this lottery?
Right.
This ticket costs $500. Sure, I'll pay for it. And so that risk, you know, whatever you want to call it, like that $500 is, they're not expecting that money back.
Okay.
They're buying this ticket. They're saying, have my money. All right, that's what I can afford. If I don't have $500, then I have $300, and I have to go further out of the money or closer to the expiration date until I can afford that lottery ticket. And sure, that lottery ticket has worse odds, whatever. They're cool with it. They're like, I'm done with this. And that's the end of the day. You don't see them mortgaging their house, you know, to buy, you know, calls that expire in 2 hours. That's not what they're doing. It's unlike the gold rush. Whenever that took place, people are like, oh, my life is going to change. I'm going to leave my life behind and move and take my family to there. And that's a risk that these people are taking with the expectation of a better lifestyle. These guys are hoping for a better lifestyle. Some of them are certainly making a ton of money and are actually achieving it. Most people are most likely losing it. Let's be fair to each other. It's easy to spot out the loud ones that made money, but most of them probably losing money. But then they go back to their job the next day, you know, sit at their office and wait for their next paycheck and pay their bills, and whatever's left over, they get to play again. And there's no risk in this particular scenario. You know, of course, that's if we leave out this whole infinite leverage, having accounts that end up in the negative. That's its own
right.
category.
Right. Yeah. I was, no. And like what you're describing to me, Jamie, is actually quote unquote responsible gambling, right? Like we're not gambling with money we can't afford to lose. So that's good. So just out there, just don't get over leveraged. Don't, you know, bet more than you can afford to lose. And I love even like the whole, you know, bets, Wall Street bets. Obviously, like Jamie, I come from a gambling background. I was a poker player first before getting into trading. And I remember listening to like you and Dave and like how Dave was talking, like saying like, oh, wow, this is even better than sports gambling. Like this is the world's greatest casino. Was this something you like had in mind when you started it, or it was just like the name you came up with?
It was. I mean, absolutely. But part of the inspiration was, as I was learning about these things very specifically, I remember about ETFs and these exotic synthetic ETFs that are leveraged on, you know, these abstract volatility products. Like I was fascinated by the fact that you look up a ticker symbol for this thing and you click buy and then you have shares in something, right? And behind the scenes, that something that I've owned is this insanely complicated web of counterparty parties and synthetic matching of things. And, you know, I was baffled by it. And it just shows up as a ticker, UVXY, whatever. You know, that to me said, this is a casino. They just packaged up a nice little lottery ticket to sell over the counter to whoever Joe Schmo. They could put in a typo into theirs. In fact, Tesla has another company that's like TLSA, wrong company, but they're doing just as good as Tesla is. Like they've been matching their pricing. You know, the fact that this was to me, to some extent, the casino. Yeah, people have been calling Wall Street a casino since I wrote this book, published last year, and as part of my research, the furthest back that I could go was in the mid 70s, right? I saw newspaper articles that were referencing Wall Street as a casino. So I'm guessing that it's always there, right? I've read all the big trading books that I'm sure you guys have read as well, Reminiscence, et cetera. Like those people were making references as well. So that's not a new thing. But I certainly wanted to go ahead and be unapologetic about the name. You know, the other places that existed at the time, let's go to this investing community or training community or Forex community, like really formal. And I would be shunned away because I'd say, hey, what do you guys think of Netflix earnings? Can we put in a little bet there? You know, people know, well, yeah, I wouldn't bet you money in there because, you know, according to these numbers, their viewership is going down. Their EBITDA has these tax implications or whatever. And so I didn't have a place to go. So I say, I'm going to make a place whose name is going to automatically reject anybody who's not all about taking risk and understand that I'm cool with losing my money. You go to the casino, you don't get mad because you lost. I mean, you can, I guess, but you don't go with the expectation that you better win. And you know, so I came up with that name, the Wall Street Bets. Wall Street is a casino. So very much it was by design. And it had the intention of scaring away any critics that might look at the activity that takes place on the forum as being too risky.
Right, for sure.
One moment. Let me just interrupt one quick sec. Here's what I like about that. It's truthful, right? Which in this industry is rare because we never tell the truth. So that's really truthful. It's Wall Street Bets, bet money that you can afford to lose. And it's very truthful about, you know, this is what it is. You bet, you win, you lose, and that's it. I like that.
You know, and it's more than that. Like I get a lot of questions, and I always have along those lines about why do people brag about their losses, right? That's something you get to see a lot on Wall Street Bets. You see the wins all the time. You're looking at all these people making bank on GameStop, but you see big losses too. And the question is, why do you see that? And it goes to that same question. Wall Street Bets is popular in large part because of refreshing honesty, this unapologetic refreshing honesty where they say, look, I'm not going to show you pictures of my Ferrari and whatever, you know, yeah. I made money today or I lost money today. Sometimes, you know, people post their trades ahead of time. Sometimes they do it after the fact. Sometimes they do it live on YouTube. And it's very entertaining to watch. But there's this camaraderie where they're like, yeah, this is not an act. We know every seasoned professional ever, unless you're like the Medallion Fund from Remsum Technology, you've lost money in this business, period.
Of course.
It doesn't matter. So the fact that you only get to hear about these big wins or whatever, you never get to be exposed to the real side of it, that makes conversation a lot more honest. And it also lends itself to these conversations. We're like, well, now that we're telling the truth, I don't really care about the stocks. I don't know what a 10K is. I'm just going to buy this stock because the car has a ludicrous button on it. And that's it. Boom.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I think that's like one of the big drivers of this movement is the honesty, the transparency that is not always prevalent on JJ's side of the street.
Hell no.
And it's like, it's given to like the little guy. It's like, you know, there's more of us than of guys on the other side of the desk. And I think it's like, it's a real, I mean, you can see everyone is so like hype. Like everyone is so like, it's like such a unified front right now. It's now whether it stays that way, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right now they're all happy because they're like all sitting around the craps table. They're all
winning. Yeah.
So that's the part of we're watching right now. Things change a little bit as soon as it changes, but you know, it's a good group.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think it's good. And as an old guy, I think there's a lot of us old guys that get pissed off that when young people make money. And I think it's great that young people are making money, right? I have nothing against that because that's when you're supposed to have money. What good is it when you have a walker, right? You know, make the bank now, go out and blow it. Have a good time.
Yeah,
have
some fun. And not only that, like there's a social component of this. And this is, once again, it was a topic in my book that I said, well, how did we get here? And to some extent, it had very much to do with, all right, well, let's start by identifying who's doing this, right? And so I proposed that it was the millennials that were doing it. Now it's most definitely on millennials as well as the Zoomer generation, Generation Z, and maybe some Generation X, who knows? But I said, this is the group. These are the ones that are doing this. And why are they doing it? Well, you know, what did they grow up on? And I myself am a millennial. I'm going back. All right, so I lived the dot-com bubble, you know, the 90s situation. I lived in 2008. I saw what the crisis did. But a lot of these kids were going to college at the time. We got to see their parents' house go upside down, all because of these Wall Street things and these fancy mortgage-backed security derivative of I don't know what with the, you know, just too complicated stuff. And the next thing you know, they're out on Wall Street with their pickets and saying, please stop this. Please stop this. It's not fair with the banks, you know, and of course, making reference to Occupy Wall Street. You know, it's a noble idea, and I get why it is, the 1%, the 99%, whatever it is. There's a reason for that, and that mistrust in the financial system. You get all these pop culture references, you get movies that come out, you get these Big Short, you get the Wolf of Wall Street, you get all sorts of pop culture situations where they're minimizing the seriousness, the eliteness of this establishment, this financial establishment. So these kids go, all right, well, if you can't beat them, let's go ahead and join them. I'm definitely not putting my retirement in that thing they call the stocks. I saw what happened to my parents. You know, I'll give it to my advisor and he'll diversify it into whatever the different asset classes and a little bit of precious metals goes away. Now, someone else will handle that side of it, but I'm not putting my money in that because I saw what everyone else went through. But that thing's still moving around. I check it out every day and those prices move up and down. And apparently you can make money through that. Yeah. You know, these companies that are behind it, they're great. Like, yeah. I don't have time to read about the company. I just see that thing is flying off the charts. So their first day into Wall Street, when they open these bank accounts, is not how am I going to retire when I'm 65 years old with my white picket fence house. That's not what they're thinking. They're like, dude, I got bills to pay. I would love to be able to pay off my student loan. Like 50 grand is all that I need. You know, hey, buddy. And they just roll the dice and they hope for the best. And a lot of them are doing it. A lot of them are losing money, but it's this attitude where like Wall Street's not a serious establishment. It's clearly never been one and it clearly never will be one. That's not that I agree with that. That's their perspective. That's the way they're walking into this when they're opening up their confetti animation on their cell phone.
Yeah, great. Well, Jamie, I got I asked for a bunch of listener questions. So I got a lot of people.
We're on live?
Huh? No.
We're on live?
All right.
I got it before we got on air. Now, I got, you know, to the listeners who asked about specific stocks, I wasn't going to ask that, right? We're not giving no buy recommendations or hold. We're not doing none of that. So I'm not asking any of those, but I got a bunch, Jamie. So we'll try and run through these quickly.
Yeah,
so I don't even know if you can answer some of these, but I'm gonna ask them anyway. We'll go through it. So how many female traders does Jamie think are active in the subreddit?
You know, I've had to address this question a lot of ways. Once again, I'm no longer on the moderator of Wall Street Bets, but up until last year when I was trying to figure that out, Reddit doesn't give you those statistics, but I do have a real active Twitter account and YouTube channel, all sorts of different things. And those people do give you the metrics. And
yeah.
To my recollection, it was 92% males, 18 to 35. This was last year. This was a year ago. I don't know what it is today. I have to go back in and check it out. My guess is that it's more diversified. I'm going to bump that. See, I still think it's probably in the minority, but based off of my followers on Twitter and the types of feedback that I'm getting there, I think there's more female that are more females that are getting into this. And also they're outside of that generation. I think we're getting older people as well.
Yeah. I would tend to agree with that. What do you think, Jay? It seems like we've been seeing more women traders lately, no?
Yes, I think that's great. Yeah. I think that's really
all right.
When I started on the trade desk, I was trained by a woman. So I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So Jamie, next question. What do you I get the question was, are you worried about any repercussions from the SEC? I know that this wouldn't involve you, but I guess just generally speaking, what do you think the SEC is doing, and is there anything they can do about this?
I'll bite. When I was moderator of Wall Street Bets, oftentimes there were rumors that the SEC shutting it down, the subreddit would go private for unrelated reasons, and people would speculate. I was never once contacted by the SEC, ever. Everything that we did was to the best of my knowledge, perfectly not only legal, but also complied with regulatory rules, I guess, that we had in place. We had situations that were clearly illegal, people that never find it out at the light of day. We have people that posted insider information. They would link these Tor Onion sites. People would attempt to make pump and dump schemes. People did try to break the law. Nobody found out about it because that's part of what a moderator does, among other things, is to make sure that things stay clean. Sometimes things would be super interesting. This infinite margin thing, obviously not against the law. Somebody's getting screwed or whatever. So we'd let that fly because it's fair game. It's freedom of speech. So let's not get into that. We did get into a situation last year with Lumber Liquidators where a person or group of people pulled off this exact same maneuver. Right, you can look it up in the press. It was coverage about that at the time. They found this low cap or mid cap stock, heavily shorted. They, with relatively low volume, then went after the out of the money call options with the short expiration, triggering the bots to do delta hedging, eventually do the gamma hedging, etc. So they did that, and I learned about this, and we put a stop to that. Shortly after that, I brought in the moderator that dissected that particular maneuver. And he said, all right, no more stocks under 10 bucks or under $1 billion net market cap, whatever. Some of the rules we kept private so that we wouldn't give away the formula. Why did I do that? Because I wasn't about to flip the coin. I don't know whether it's legal or not. It's certainly gray area. It's certainly no precedent. Nothing like this has ever happened before. So you can't look at some previous case as an example. It doesn't exist. You cannot make comparisons. This is a brand new situation. And I realized that. So I said, I'm not going to risk it. This community is too cool. So what if they're going to miss out on some interesting situations? Now I'm no longer in it. Now I'm watching it as a passive observer. I'm not, I don't envy anybody in anything that has to play any part of the situation. I do not envy the SEC. I do not envy FINRA. I do not envy the moderators of Wall Street Bets. And I don't envy Reddit, the company that hosts the subreddit. They're all in a really sticky situation. I don't know. I asked myself, what would happen if some of the moderators were also trading some of these stocks, right? That those questions end up being really different than when an individual has a stock. Because the moderators have the ability to control the conversation to some extent. They can do so by limiting certain types of conversations or encouraging others, I guess, although that's not ever been their style. They certainly can decide what goes through. They're the gatekeeper. So that, I'd be worried if that was the situation. The SEC has a headache on their hands. They, I've seen some of this coverage towards disclosure, like JJ was making reference to earlier. Not only the rule that you referenced, but some other disclosure rule. I also saw... Yeah.
Sorry, that just means all that means is if I have if I'm getting paid by someone who owns stock that's
gotcha. Selling
to it,
yeah,
I have to disclose.
You have to disclose you're getting paid. Yeah, there was an additional one. There's an additional disclosure rule for saying if I take a certain stake in a company, I also need to.
That's true. So
I've seen those both of those statutes be discussed, and I don't think they're going to go anywhere because nobody there is getting paid. At least I don't think so. There's too many people, and it's just not a viable strategy for any company, even though it might sound smart in retrospect. Trying to do that ahead of time is a near impossible task. It's not an organization that they can file this disclosure of buying such a large quantity of stock. It's just a bunch of kids, right? So those, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see those catching any traction. The other conversations that I've been seeing online in the different forums are the pump and dump and the fraud, you know, misinformation. Doesn't seem to be much of the case on the misinformation. I don't see anybody saying GameStop's a great company.
So
they're pretty open about the fact that they're pumping this thing and they're happy that they're knocking over hedge funds. Like that's perfectly legal as far as I'm concerned. I have no idea. Yeah. And you know, and then the other one, when it comes to manipulating the market attention, you know, if you want to unload your stock, if you have shares in something and you try to pump this price up so you can dump them on somebody, an unwitting investor, like there's no unwitting participants in this situation. They all know that they're going to lose their money. It's musical chairs and they're having fun playing musical chairs and they know the balls of the music's going to stop at some point. And then whoever's left holding the ball at that point, like that's fine. That they understand the rules of the game. There's no suckers getting sucked in. Surely I can't speak to everybody. Most likely there are some people that don't fall into that category, but even if they manage to get over that, they then have to go after the sheer quantity of people that are involved in this. You know, there's 2 million people they're subscribed to. But the fact is, there's most likely many more people involved with this. You know, once again, when I was there, we'd get we had like 1 million subscribers. You know, we'd get 5 million unique visitors a day, and I forget how many unique visitors a month, but it was an astounding number, and it was nothing close. You have to register a Reddit account. You have to log into the thing. You have to click the submit. You know, most people don't even do that. So there's too many people to investigate. So I don't envy them, you know, and then I don't envy Reddit because they have to deal with this whole Section 230 thing. Like if regulators come in and say to them, hey, your people are misbehaving, you got to do something about it. And Reddit dips their hand into that and they say, okay, fine, we're going to do something about it. Even if it's like, I'm removing those moderators or I'm changing enforcement rules or something more active, like I'm going to put my own moderators in there, then they're starting to blur the lines between being an editor, being a contributor, and just being a tech platform and say, well, I don't know, you know, I'm not aiding and abetting anything. I'm just, you know, doing what you say. It's a sticky all around. So I know that's a long-winded answer, but it's a complicated topic.
For sure.
It is, and it's a good question, good answer too, because we're moving into a different time in the world, and things are changing. So, you know, compliance and those they're going to have to groove with and move with the changes and move with the times.
Yeah. You know, and I saw a quote as part of my research at one point where they were trying to go after, I'm sure you guys might remember this, some flash crash some years ago that was caused by some kid doing spoofing, you know, on
Navinder Singh Sarra.
That guy. Yeah. And so, you know, when they're talking about the regulators trying to go after whatever, there was a huge quote where they said, you know, the regulators are trying to chase after a Ferrari from their bicycle. You know, they're behind, and I don't know that they need to, you know, catch up with the times. Look, this is totally different landscape that we're working with at these points.
Well, the other thing too is Nav was every time there is a time in history where finance does something a little different, be it junk bonds, right? So they had, like, just like they hit Bilzerian for stock parking, Boesky for junk bonds, Singh Sarra for spoofing. There's always one guy that they've got as a scapegoat, right? The entire industry is doing it, but one guy gets nailed, right? I mean, look at the mortgage crisis. Only one person actually got criminally charged, right? So the whole industry, and I know because my whole job, you know, since 1993 was to know the rules and find ways around them. Right. So, yeah, and this is a really fascinating time. That's why I'm fascinated by this whole thing, because I didn't even know what you guys were. You know, I just see all this retail and I'm like, oh my God, look at all this retail. Isn't this beautiful? right? Mm-hmm. And because I'm a liquidity guy, right? And, you know, the more people come to the party, the better, you know, because I like liquid markets.
Yeah. Yep.
And for listeners out there, Bilzerian, we're talking about Dan's dad.
Yes.
The original Bilzerian. Look him up if you guys don't know him.
Real. I follow Dan Bazillion on Instagram. That guy's got some great.
Dude. I mean, his dad was, you know, he was one of the first, you know, raiders out there. You know, he did Singer and he did a bunch of those deals, man. And and they nailed him for something that people do every day, right? I think they finally got him for stock parking, right? And you know, they always try and have one poster boy. That they can blame and make the bad guy of the whole thing. Whereas like there's 3,000 guys doing it, right? But you know, oh, we need a sacrificial lamb, you know, throw him to the wolves, right? Oh, looks good on the paper. Okay. You know.
Yeah. All right, well, I mean, but even that, if you want to talk about trial by media or trial by public, by jury, by public, that's even difficult. Like, who are you going to put on there? There's way too many people for, you know, before you get any ideas. I got nothing to do with this. I saw it. You know, I've been out of this game for a while. Retired. But, you know, it's going to be difficult to find that one guy that to take the fall. You know, we'll see how it plays out. Look, it can play out a lot of different ways. You know, things might just fizzle down. Maybe the regulators don't have anything that viable to come up with. And as the cycle always takes place on these types of issues, it'll fizzle away. And that's that. Or, you know, on the other hand, maybe we'll have something that's a little less anticlimactic. Who knows?
Right. Who knows? Well, like you said, we'd hate to be those guys, honestly. Jamie, next question. Do you see this as just being like maybe just like a current trend, or do you think this movement has lasting power?
Movement. Interesting word. I don't know that it's a movement yet. It might turn into one. You know, it's these kids wanted to make money. I don't think they got together one day and said, hey, how can we knock over a hedge fund? I think we can do it this way. And then they pull this huge conspiracy. I think they got into this thing like they always do. You know, they try to make some money and they're trying to have fun making some money. And it turns out along the way, they're getting a lot of traction for this. And it turns out along the way, they knocked the hedge fund. So of course they're going to hold hands and cheer and say, look what we've done. Now that turns into a movement at that point. I don't think they have the organizational structure to be able to put something so elaborate together. But we'll see what turns into it. There's certainly a lot of language that's starting to resemble a movement, but I don't know what the end game would be. What are you trying to do? Knock all the hedge funds down? Guess what? They're the ones usually on the other side of the tree. Like, we all need to play poker. You can't just take out the players and shoot them in the head and still play poker. Like, so that's not going to happen. So I struggle with the question just on the premise of that there's a movement. They're trying to make money.
It's funny. No, I mean, some people are like we're knocking out all the hedge funds, we're coming for you guys.
And then what?
I wonder what's what's Larry Fink thinking right now? Like, I just think, well, what are some of these guys really thinking? Are they laughing? Are they taking this serious? It's, you know,
I know what they're thinking. They're trying to think how they can get those people's money. So they're going to be tailoring their advertising to that demographic because they're asset gatherers and they need to have money coming in every month like waves of the ocean.
For sure. And what I've seen, JJ, and I don't think this is purposeful. I could be wrong, but Kathy Woods, right, of our capital, seems like Wall Street Bets is all behind her, right? I mean, they love like Elon, like all her, you know, everything she's involved in. She's heavily in the space sector, right? I think she's bringing that space ETF. So I don't know if we see these guys starting to like leverage this, right? It's obviously a lot of buying power, a lot of volume coming from this. There's a
ton of buy. I mean, be nice to them.
Right.
You know?
They're all behind her in all her plays lately, you know? And I mean, I know she's the hot name too in the market right now, but all right. Yeah. Well, to the next question. All right. Jamie, that's kind of a long one. Why does the subreddit promote shorting a financial instrument as some sort of bad thing? This way they give the retail traders a cause to rally against some common big evil. Would they explain in their Reddit group that shorting is just the other side of a trade transaction?
I'm guessing whoever posted that question is really new to the subreddit. Mm-hmm. If he feels like people are trash talking short sellers, It's most likely because right now they're trashing short sellers. You know, go back to last year and you'll find out that there was a completely different mindset. They were all about the shorting back then. You know, they're participating in the market. They're having fun with this. You know, they're making a bet and then they're cheering each other. It's like when you're watching a football game on TV, you know, you're screaming at the guy, that's a penalty, that's a foul, whatever. Then, come on, ref, you have to kick him out of the game. And the other guy, no, it wasn't. You know, it's within the line. That's what's taking place on the subreddit right now. They're all just kind of rallying. You know, this is the first time that everyone's kind of speaking in unison. There seems to be homogeneous agreement that going long is the way to go. That's not always the case. Sometimes everyone's on board with shorting, and sometimes it's in the middle somewhere. Usually when there's transitions in the market that's been trending for a while. That's just the topic du jour. You know, go back and you'll struggle to find somebody that spoke highly about a bull, you know, back in March 2020. You know, it's welcome to Wall Street Bets. I suppose you have to spend some more time to really get a hang on on the community.
For sure. Bringing it back to kind of like the topic of transparency, this next question is about Chamath, and I guess he went on CNBC. I don't know if you got to see him speak on CNBC. And I guess in essence, the question is saying that he spoke to that why this movement isn't being successful is because of the transparency, whereas hedge funds, there is no transparency. Is this, do you see this the same way?
What is he talking about? I mean, I think people are putting so much complexity into it. I mean, I can understand why he would say that. He's an activist, social capital. You know, I get that question coming out of him. Now it makes sense for him to say something like that. You know, it's like asking a kid whose parents dressed him for school that day, and then the teacher asked him why he put on blue shorts. You know, it's like the kid's like, I don't know what you thought. I just got to school, dude. Like, I'm just trying to make some money.
Right.
If you're looking from a sociological perspective of what this impact of the transparency things of stuff, like funds are transparent. I don't know what he's talking about. Funds disclose what they do to their shareholders. They have to, right? Like, you know, and where's the transparency in Reddit? You know, you have individuals that are saying I'm doing this. You know, there's no legal proof. There's no way to hold somebody accountable on a legal standpoint that what they said is the truth. You know, you can pretty much infer that they're telling the truth when you see what's happening to the stock market, the stock prices. Then, yeah, if everyone's saying they're buying GameStop, and this stock is doing what it is, you can pretty much guess that that's taking place. But I don't know. I find the relevancy really kind of tricky in this situation. And I'm really having trouble drawing this distinction between them and us and transparency and funds and not. Like, it's all the same people. They all do the same freaking thing. You know, it just so happens that these guys are all under a different name. You have Goldman Sachs and you have Wall Street Bets, and that's it. Like, yeah. You know, it's.
let me just interject really quickly. If the stock market was truly a transparent place, the general public would have access to DTC sheets from each company, which is what is called a security position report. If the stock market was truly a transparent place, you would be able to see where stock is located in the system. And that really determines a lot on how it trades, believe it or not. But that sort of thing is opaque, and most people don't even know what a DTC sheet is, but that's okay. So that's what I'm saying, you know, that whole transparency thing for you guys, they can't hold you to a higher standard than themselves, right? Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and it's like, but what's the trend? Are you literally going to take the word of a kid that posted, you know, a TikTok video dancing around in their Tesla? Like, is that considered disclosing of my, is that transparency?
Yeah.
Right. Like, so if that's the case, and I guess he's got a point, you know, it's, I think what he probably meant, and I did not see that quote, so perhaps I'm not doing it justice. My guess is he's most likely looking at it from the perspective of, this is turning the shifting power from Wall Street to Main Street. This is allowing people to be in control of their own money. You know, Dave Portnoy repeats this frequently too. He goes, well, I'm happier losing my own money than have a fund lose it for me, right? And like, he's been very open on days that he lost money, He said, well, at least it was me that lost it. You know, it wasn't some other dude that I was paying commissions for. Yeah. I think it's more towards that side where it's like, look, you're at least controlling it this time. Last time that these things crashed, somebody else was driving. Now it can crash, but it's up to you.
All right. Two more questions. Wrap it up. What are some good resources for newer traders to utilize to start getting an edge in the smaller cap markets or in any of the markets in general?
Skip.
Okay. Knowing the various personal missions and motives we all have, one glaring one is sticking it to the shorts. Do those who have taken advantage of many for so long, thoughts on the potential of seeking a challenge in silver and taking on JP Morgan's perpetual short position?
What's wrong with like what? Like, I don't understand this. I haven't been exposed to it, honestly. Perhaps that's why this is the first time that I've heard this attitude of like, oh, let's stick it to the shorts. Like, I've heard that thing be used before and they're trying to kill shorts. Sure, that's fine. Like, you know, what are shorts? You know, they're just not even the other side of the trade. I would argue that it's its own trade, a short position. It serves its own purpose. You need to have participants in the market. You need the liquidity in order to get the price discovered. Like, it's all part of the process. What are shorts? You know, like, perhaps it doesn't register anymore to me because this system is such an arbitrary fluctuating number of things that bounce on a screen in numbers. And they have no relevance to society, like to real life. If I say, let's short something, let's say that I want to short something for my 401k. I said, no, you can't short something for it's against the rules. You know, you can't. All right, cool. Fine. So I'm going to go long an inverse ETF on the S&P with double X leverage. Now what? Oh, I'm long, right? I'm long.
Yeah,
but I'm long a put, right? Like, what does short even mean? It's exactly. It's a strange question, you know, at least in JJ, you'll know this better than me. When I started, there was something that was called an uptick rule. I guess it might not be there anymore, but short positions couldn't even actually hurt the price of whatever they're shorting because of the way this rule was set up. So if I got this correctly, yeah, now they can finally affect the price, but the real people that were affecting prices historically were sellers of the owners of the stocks. They're the only
exactly.
Market sell. That's right. What drops the price. Period.
I'm going to tell you a little secret. Okay. When you have 300 million shares of stock to dispose of in a market, it's always wonderful to have a short seller that you can blame it on. And then you can sell the stock and blame the short seller instead of the insiders actually getting rid of their investment into the retail flow. So, you know, short sellers have always been blamed for, it's just another trading strategy, right? Mm-hmm. That's all it is, right? And now after Regulation SHO, where you actually have to borrow shares to short them, right? There's so much less shorting going on. And really there are really not that many big short sellers left because this market has just ground them into the dust, into the dirt. You know, because there's no supply.
Yeah. No, I feel like we've been talking about this for a long time now, Jay, right? Just the resiliency of this market and just how hard it is to short. But Jamie, that's going to wrap it up for the listener question. So that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed the show, please rate and review it for us. If you want to learn market auction theory, market profile, if you like to trade futures, trade equities and or options, join JJ and I at microefutures.com. Jamie, tell the people where they can find you. Anything else you want them to know?
Yeah, I guess you can find me on Wall Street Bets, all spelled out on Twitter. You can look up my book, I guess, on Amazon. It's Wall Street Bets, How Boomers Made the World's Biggest Casino for Millennials. And that's about it.
Awesome. Good stuff. JJ, parting words.
Thank you very much for the information and opening my eyes and educating the old crew. You know, thanks for coming by. Really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, appreciate you having me on, and very timely. So for Jamie Rogozinski, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's the gorilla of House Street. Make sure you're using Stop Slow.